It's the Maximum Fun Drive. Yes, it is that time of year where we devote to inviting you all to become a member of the Maximum Fun Network, or maybe you're already a member. So it's that time of year to boost or upgrade your membership and supporting this show with your monthly contributions, joining the fun, joining the community. And it's essentially how we maintain our independence and keep the show going on for you all to enjoy. And it's that independence that y'all love, this voice that keeps it just raw and real here at Minority Corner. And it's also a great time to join, and you're gonna get some perks because we love you, and we're gonna throw some amazing thank yous because you deserve it. And we're gonna talk about all those later. So it's so easy to join. There are all kinds of levels for you to join in on the action at a level that works for you. Just select your favorite show, like Minority Corner, for example, or Can I Pet Your Dog? Because Renee is here on the show. All you got to do is go to MaximumFun.org/join. Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him. I'm a queer political activist, actor, comedian, self-proclaimed sexy blurb. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by other fabulous minorities and some allies tackling the news, pop culture, politics, media, entertainment, and history with a little self-care, self-love sprinkled throughout, all for our own personal and collective empowerment. Here we go, a brand new episode. Yes, so excited for this one. This is a big one coming at ya. It's just a big old love fest coming your way because my love and your love, Renee Culvert from Max Fun's Can I Pet Your Dog, is here. What a gift. What a gift. And y'all know I love my cult shows, and I found a new one, Scraping the Bottom of the Barrel. What a gem. Wild, Wild Country 2018 hit. I missed it. We dive into it, and I give you everything. I paint the whole picture and take you on this Mr. Toad's Wild, Wild Ride of this documentary. But is this a cult? I don't know. Is it a cult? We'll find out. And is this story actually just a microcosm for America doing what America does best? It's the summer of musicals with West Side Story and In the Heights. And we've got our Broadway lady here, Renee Culvert. And we talk about our excitement and our thoughts about going back to the theater. Do's and don'ts. The numbers are in of how many Gen Z are LGBTQ+, and the internet reacts. And in the main corner, is the Kentucky Derby racist? Someone asked the question, and I dug deep to find the information. Let's get some more information. We're going to dig into the history of how and where it stands now. We are going in deep. And in honor of Asian American Heritage Month, Renee takes us through Ruthie Ann Miles, Broadway legend, why we love her, and you're gonna love her as well. And we just talk about musicals galore. Chess? What's that? You'll find out. And it's the Maximum Fun Drive, so we're gonna be diving into all the ways that you can join in and support and why it is so important to do so. So here we go. Let's get started on a brand new Minority Corner Maximum Fun Drive style. Let's go. Renee, it feels like Christmas or whatever, holiday season, one celebrates. I love it. It's the Maximum Fun Drive, and the gift just walked through the door, and it's Renee from Can I Pet Your Dog.
You, sweet, sweet, sweetie. I love you so much. Now, here's what's funny.
I love you so much.
Is that it's okay. My Christmas. You're my gift.
Oh.
We got each other.
Look at us.
Not the same thing.
But... It's like the opposite of the gift of the Magi. It's like the gift of the Beyonce, you know? Because it's like Beyonce giving Beyonce a gift or something. You know?
That's exactly what it's like.
Look, I just named us both Beyonce. It's a gift. She's like, because there's nothing else that someone could give Beyonce anything better than herself.
Wouldn't that be, but really, let's sit in that for a second. You're friends with Beyonce. Yeah. It's all of our dreams. Just wanted to be best friends with Beyonce.
Yes.
What you don't think through there? Birthday, Christmas, What are you going to do?
Mm-hmm. What are you going to do? I guess maybe it's the gift of the Beyonce Michelle. Now we're just naming people we like. Michelle Obama, because like Michelle from Destiny's Child, like that's not a gift to anybody. But I feel like that would be the only thing that could maybe top it. It'd be like, Beyonce, I brought you Michelle. Oh, or Michelle, shoot. I brought you Beyonce. Okay, yeah. And then just that's get them a winning to agree on situation. It. Okay.
All right. Mm-hmm. But then these manifesting dreams can stay in place. Never mind. I thought I'd found a little snag in the plan, but... You fixed it.
Nope. We can just
give her Michelle every time. Going, well, okay.
I love having you here. I love the Maximum Fun Drive because I feel like it's my opportunity to like podcast trap you into spending time with me. Because I'm just like, oh, Renee, well, we got to do some cross promotional. You got to come do this.
We have no choice.
And you're like, but James, it's, you know, October. I didn't know that there was a Maximum Fun Drive. And I'm like, you got me. Just trying to make you hang out with me.
You're sweet to say as much, but then I am also like, hey, we're recording at 6:30. We should probably log on at what, like noon? Just to be ready? Just to be ready. just to make sure we're warmed up. We're good.
That we're good.
Accidentally spend the day together. Gosh. If we could, please.
This will be the show. Us. I don't know if y'all can realize this, but Renee and I love each other. Mm-hmm. Like it is... I feel like we're back. They're like, we're tired of hearing about your time when you all met at the Poconos dancing. Well, you know what? You got to listen.
Listen, you're here. That's what origin stories are for, to be told over and over and over again. Now, I don't know how I got so lucky. Listeners are going to be on my side for this. Like, if you get the gift to meet James Arthur M., you're going to lock your claws into that as fast as you can. You're my favorite person, is what you'll say. So yeah. Mine makes sense. I don't know what you're doing, but...
Okay. No, I disagree. Disagree. Oh, yes. Man. Well, here you are. And there's much for us to discuss. And the first thing on the table is, so you know this, and the listeners know this as well. I am obsessed with cults. Like, not like I don't I feel like that always comes out weird. Like, I'm obsessed with Scientology. Right. Not, like, doing it. Yeah. But, like, I'm obsessed with people, like, who escape it, you know? Or escape cults. Because I am susceptible to cults, as we
know. Now, you brush that off. Know. Like, that's just something people say. It delighted
who
me.
Who's not susceptible?
To no end.
Are you not susceptible? I know so my weaknesses.
But the people who are susceptible usually don't know that they are.
So I've watched all of the cult documentaries. I didn't realize, you know, some people are obsessed with murder shows. I was like, haha, that's weird. And then come to find out that it's another subsect of people who are obsessed with cult shows. And that's
yeah.
Because I love a scandal and mystery. And how did someone, I don't like the murder stuff because someone died. Although sometimes at the end of these cults, sometimes people do
100%
mass suicide or shot a bunch of people. Yeah. But I usually like it when it's telling the story of people who escaped and then I can learn from them.
Completely. Yep. Have you let yourself get into the podcast Guru from Laundry?
I have not. No. Okay.
But put that on your, that's going to be right up your alley.
Put it on there.
It's a cult podcast.
I did the WeWork podcast. That one I'm because WeWork business cult. But I found, was scraping around. I can't believe, listeners, you're going to be like, James, you call yourself cult of the cults, a culty. I don't know if that's, do we have a name?
Yeah, no. You were saying that right before we logged on.
Call yourself a culty. Wild Wild Country, which came out in 2018, I hadn't seen it. And I have to tell you, this, along with Leah Remini's Scientology show, which is just bananas because it's Leah Remini.
Sure.
This is maybe one of my favorite ones. It might be up there as one of my favorite ones. So it's six parts. And it's about the controversial Indian guru Bhagwan and his one-time personal assistant, Ma Anad Sheila. She really just goes by Sheila. And the Rajneesh, which was a community who relocated to Wasco County, Oregon. Very fascinating six-part series. And I felt like, at least for this one, but I dug a little deeper and I was like, oh, this was not included in the documentary. On the surface level, it really touches on a lot of different things. So you have this community, it's like hippy dippy community, like 70s, 80s, coming into like Oregon. And like Oregon was founded to be a white utopia. It was illegal for black people to own property up until like the 50s or 60s. And so it had a mass amount of like KKK organizations. So they're very like, it was very conservative really for the longest time. Right. And by conservative, I feel like I forgot. I mean racist. I feel like sometimes we say conservative, it's like what we mean is racist.
Yeah, very racist.
Upholding white supremacy and all that, you know, good stuff, right? All that good, classic good stuff. But with this documentary, like, it's really fascinating because on the surface level, watching the documentary, my takeaways were, wow, this organization was really just, like, people could come and go as they please. So it's not like in some of the other ones you see where they're like, your family hates you, you got to be here, and, like, let me brand you, give me all your money. There didn't seem like there was a pyramid scheme to it. A lot of the stuff came from where the townspeople, they wanted to start their own town in their own city. Mm-hmm. And the townspeople were like, we don't want these people here. And they literally worked the political system to try to allow themselves to stay, like did some like crazy, like where they would, they were busing in at one point unhoused people from across like the country to be able to increase their numbers. So that way they could vote to become their own city or maintain power. And it was weird because it was interesting because like these white local people were like, they're taking our land, which seeing no irony in this at all.
Yeah.
For any white American to be like, they're taking our land.
Right. Let's go ahead and dial in a little bit on our, of the things to take on this. How did it become yours?
Yes. Okay. 100%. Yeah. So there are some questions that did leave up, like, you know, how did he had like a lot of Rolls Royces. There was, of course, like actors from Hollywood who were like then trickling in. So there were some questions unanswered. One of the biggest things of why this organization unraveled, though, and like the FBI was going in hard on them. But I think part of it was because you had, even though it was mostly a lot of white followers, but you had at the top this guy from India and this woman from India who was really the spokesperson for this organization. And I think that people did not like seeing that. And even though, like, you have a lot of the followers are mostly sort of, you know, white people. And on the other side, they wouldn't then let the unhoused people vote. And so you have another form of, like, voter suppression that's sort of happening. They're like, oh, you can't just bus in people here. But, hey, now they live here. And then they were like, oh, we have all these unhoused people, and some of them are now mentally ill because Ronald Reagan was like, hey, be free. So it's a lot of layers. It's a lot of things that are going on with the United States. And also just interesting because Sheila, who she was a powerhouse and she's a very badass, you know, woman who she was pretty much running the organization itself. And he was, you know, the guru who also didn't speak for like several years, which
my God,
I feel like, so they built this community for like a few years. And then he comes to the community all the way from India, over to Oregon, and he just smiles and then like walks off. I would be like, oh, man. That's what I would have been like. Wait, I built all these houses and these streets, and
that's, of course,
I can't get no words.
Right? No, you can't have it. Well, I feel like I've seen it now. There's more. Even more. Okay, I'm ready. But I do want to take it because it is Max Fun Drive. I just got to tell you, James. As someone who did not prepare. Feel like we are getting a full show with only one person knowing what's going on. Listeners, this deal that you were getting right now on this show, two for one with James.
It's a pledge break already.
Not only James, but also carrying me. It's the best. It's the best.
Mainly, before we got on, Renee's like, I don't really know anything about this. I'm like, don't worry, girl. I'm just going to talk about it. And you just sit right there and give me some, what? Whoa. What?
Okay. You don't say, but I'm genuinely invested in this now. This is fascinating. Okay.
It is. It's a very fascinating, it's an incredibly fascinating documentary. And again, like there was no mass suicide at the end of this one. I saw this one as, It's a religious organization. I wouldn't even call this one a cult. I am a cult aficionado.
Yeah,
so much more as just an organization. I see this so much very similar to like, you know, Mormonism. Like to me, it's like there was a people who were getting a lot of good out of this. I also couldn't tell you what they actually really believe and practice, though, which I also think is really interesting.
Is always a tricky one.
But it made people feel good, so I'm like, great. Did, you know, as far as I can see in the documentary, they didn't murder anybody. Did they poison the townspeople? Yes. Yes, they did. They gave them salmonella. But because the townspeople were trying to chase them out of this town and they were Americans, so isn't this like freedom of religion? Did they, you know, take a hostile, did they take a, do a government hostile takeover? I mean, to find hostile, they used the government systems that were in place and they voted and they took it over.
Aren't you so impressed with people's ingenuity and ability to sort of like to come up with an idea? Sure, we all can do that. What if we gave them all salmonella? But that's usually where this one stops.
Yes.
It's like, I don't know.
Oh.
And yet to do it effectively. My goodness.
Did they try to when there was a, so between Sheila and then the head guru guy, Bakwan, when they were kind of, she was... not like falling out of power. Anyways, long story long, he was like, well, this is going to be a bit of a spoiler. Did they try to kill his doctor by like stabbing a needle into his leg? Sure, sure. Did that doctor die from that? No.
Close? Oh, sure.
This has everything too, because like when he tries to, this is like pre OJ Simpson, like in in a Bronco, no one was murdered. They just went like, I talk about the Bronco, right? Getting in the Bronco and going, because like the FBI was like, okay, we're going to raid this compound or whatnot.
Of course.
And Bakwan gets on a jet and is like, I'm out of here. And so they're like trying to like track down where he is, but he had to, because he's trying to get to Bermuda. It's far away from Oregon. He had to stop and fuel. And something else that happens that is really fucked up is that when they do... Okay, I'm not like giving. You still have to watch the documentary, everybody. This is...
Okay, all right. They will. Or we can just fast forward, right? Just a little bit of a bloop, just, bloop, bloop, bloop on your 15.
But there were just
three 15 bloops.
A few different things that like was just very... it was very illuminating to me of what I saw. I didn't feel like, oh, poor townspeople. I felt like when you saw... Essentially, like, the main gist of it is a division between him and this woman who was his right-hand person, who she was essentially like her entire life was devoted to this. She didn't like to meditate. She wasn't really there for any of that, but she was like, let's create this, you know, community. But they were so, he broke his silence after she left. He broke his like 3-year silence and he was like, fuck her, she's a bitch. Like, get the cameras.
The best of them, yeah.
Get the cameras. And he's supposed to be this like guru guy. Lost it. And then and he was like, FBI, come and see all the things that she was doing. And they're like, oh, okay. And now we're coming after you. So he like, because of the, like, hurt people. And it's probably because like, he was hanging out with these actresses and she was like, oh, okay, he ain't got time for me. Well, I'm out of here. So she left over to Switzerland. So that's like the real like drama and tea when you really get it. So I want to switch gears into something that's more so your wheelhouse. You are our Broadway lady. Hi, kick it in. Hi, let's see those kicks. Kick them higher. So this is good. This is your summer. This is the summer for you because you have not one, but two musicals. Two musicals singing and dancing in New York City, right? And
the greatest
like,
gift.
It's just, I almost feel like it's interesting because one is West Side Story and one is In the Heights. And I almost feel like them coming out together is almost like a meta West Side Story in of itself, right? Because it's like these
now,
two.
Now looky there. Mean, oh, someone please make that for me. Someone has to, right?
These two musicals going up against
each other.
The mashup
of those two. That I feel someone out there
in
smarter
the Heights,
than I will create this for me.
Fireworks.
It's going to be amazing. Amazing. Now, may I tell you, James, that I stand before you as a Broadway person. I also stand before you as someone who has a lot of OCD and rage, frankly, at other people singing in a musical that I have gone to focus on. So what a gift that this will be streamed for me live in my living room so that no one will receive a dirty look, nair a glance at, I also know the words, but I'm respecting the art.
You know, it's been such a long pandemic that I totally forgot that when I go into the movie theater, because I can see myself sitting in front of this big screen, I forgot that there's going to be several other people also there. making comments.
Who have just been locked inside for 14 months.
And they don't know what they're doing. They're
involuntary singing, I think. Involuntary?
Oh, yeah. They won't be able to help themselves. Right. They will forget. Because I know this for a fact, because my aunt and uncle, when they first got like their massive, giant screen TV, and they would get like all the, they would never have a reason to go to the theater. So we once foolishly brought them to the movie theater, and they just thought the screen was as large as there's a one at home. And so, and it was a murder mystery suspense thriller, which was the worst. Because lots of questions. Lots of questions.
To chime in. What's of going on?
Wait, but who is this? I don't think that's who it is. So there was a lot of conversation happening. Luckily, the movie had been out for like 2 months. So we were like the only people there in the theater. But it was like a bad test drive. So again.
Do you think the kid sees ghosts?
Is he dead? I think he's dead. I think he's dead. Saw it coming. Yeah, I read an article about it. but we do have In the Heights and West Side Story. I've only seen the teasers for both. I think In the Heights is a longer trailer. Mm-hmm. I hate trailers. Like, tell me the movie date. I'm there. Even though I've already seen In the Heights, like, what are you going to spoil for me? Like, you know, I don't want to see it.
No. Yeah, fair. Now, can I tell you something I did to myself? Just the opening number is available for us on Spotify.
Spoiler.
That you can listen to.
Spoiler.
Did Lin-Manuel work himself into that opening number? Of course he did. Yeah. He did. You know that cameo's in there. Let me guess.
Because he's too... Yes. He can't be Usnavi at this point. He can't. He's not
Usnavi.
He's the Petty Aqua guy. Like the ice cream cone
exactly.
guy.
Yeah. Little bit of shaved ice for you and yours.
Yes.
Care of one LMM.
That's the perfect role for him. Because one, he can never age out of that. So he's always got a part for himself. Even if they do like a remake of this 50 years from now. Because they will. Because look, they're doing a West Side Story remake 50 years later. So we know this is coming. He's got work. The kid's got work.
But I got to tell you that. He's going to be fine. He's going to be all right, that one. But that, I tell you what, that Piaqua song hit some notes. So either they've modified it or...
Okay. This is why Broadway lady coming in and being like, I've got notes on the notes, so...
I've got notes on the notes. But my point of that is just, you know how like they'll make a movie musical and they bring in the stars and the stars are fine and they can carry a tune, but they cannot carry it the way those Broadway kids are. It's so good.
Ooh.
Every single, I dare say some of these voices are better than the cast recording. It's nuts. You would expect nothing
because
less,
Lin-Manuel,
but I am
Miranda's
just over
not,
the moon about
he's
it.
Not like, okay Tara Reid, let's shoehorn Tara Reid into this production. Her producer has like, I don't know, sucked someone's dick to get on this show.
Right, and, of course, always. Yeah, at a bar, she dumbly said, I could dodge a flying shark. And they were just like, get in here, Sharknado.
Oh
get in here.
We're not shoehorning, I don't know, Emma Stone into here. She's not playing a Latina or something. We're not doing that.
Right. Thank God. Yeah. Oh, God help us.
She auditioned.
But yeah, no, I think they both look, I mean, I like In the Heights a little bit better.
It's going to be more colorful and splashy. But that West Side Story, man, is it going? I like how dark it's going. It's dark and gritty. Because it's a gritty tale. Yeah. It is a gritty tale. And
Okay. because you're going to know this and I'm not as well. I know we had some correct casting in the original, but I would imagine we had a lot of incorrect casting.
Yeah, like the lead was, Natalie Wood? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is she white?
Yeah. Right. We can't, I won't stand for it. So I think that is the beginning and end of why should we remake this? If it's already a classic, why would we remake it? Because we fucked up the casting.
Yeah.
So I don't really know why we're continuing to argue
this. Oh, yeah. It was
so that we can cast
it
properly.
We needed to go back and fix that mistake. And I'm interested, too, because Steven Spielberg, I don't think, has ever directed a musical. So I think that this will be really exciting to see what he does with it. And two, I hope that I saw an amazing Broadway production, the last show I saw before I left New York, of West Side Story. And it was so gritty and dark, and the way they did the casting, they actually casted it where it wasn't necessarily, it was, the way they casted it, there was even like some, who are the Jets? The Jets are the, white people.
Well, they're
okay.
Yes.
So correct. On the Jets, it wasn't just white people. It actually had some, like, you know, there's some white guys and some black guys on there too.
Great.
And then the Sharks were like Caribbean, Puerto Rican. It was more so like folks down. It mainly, again, not taking away. It was definitely like, you know, Puerto Rican. But
sure.
Anyways, this was so interesting, and it just was like, I don't know. It was very. It was a modern take on it as well. It was just very fascinating. Yeah. They had like. It was so good. So it reminded me of that. It seems like a darker take on it, because like, yeah, these kids are singing and dancing, but that's from pain. That is from pain, and it's because they have to.
Thank you. Yes, it's your only way to express it. Yes.
God, you're a Jet. I want to live in America. You will get shot in America. It is really scary in America. You will die in America.
That, honestly, why you're not in this?
I would love to play the role of Anita. Still available. They can just CG my face in there.
Yeah, absolutely. There's going to be a sequel. We'll make it work.
Oh, yeah, because the other two are dead. So, like, oh, spoiler alert.
Uh-oh. Oops.
Spoiler alert that it's based on Romeo and Juliet. Like, you know, like, you don't know. Right. But I didn't say who. I didn't say who dies.
They have played There's a Place for Us over the memorial during the Oscars enough times that you know, like, oh, whatever's going on during the song, someone has died.
Yeah. You definitely know. Well, looks like we're both going. We should go together. Let's go to like either a really early Sunday show or a really late show on a Tuesday.
Precisely. Because if you sing,
I won't. Now that I know what your boundaries and requests are, I might hum.
No, I think if America, so long as I
have to do that last. I'll hum everything up to that.
I love it. I love nothing more. Okay, great. We're going. I'm glad we got that settled.
Okay. Woof. I thought that was gonna. Okay. Last tidbit of just news. So this was the headline in the Washington Post recently. 1 in 6 Gen Z adults are LGBT, and this number could continue to grow. Okay. So that was the headline. People are taking to Twitter like, okay, what's the headline makes it sound like it's a threat. Like this.
Right.
So.
Is the Twitter response a shrug of just like, great? Or what are people saying?
Well, they've tweeted out in response, unless our demands are met, we will continue turning up this little dial labeled LGBT.
Good. Okay, that's what I wanted. Yeah. Let's get some sarcasm.
There's another one. Citizens of Gotham, until the Batman reveals his identity, the number of LGBT adults will continue to grow every day.
That's fun. This is good. Yeah, I like this. This is fun.
Like petting your cat. Every minute the money is not delivered to me, there will be another LGBT adult, Mr. Bond. I vow to create an environment that is so inclusive. Yeah.
These are, listen, every single one of you tweeters, I love it so much. Did we get a little reprimand for the person that wrote it? Did we get a little them? Did we get a retraction?
Bezos, what's up? Are you, too busy making people work in your labor camp.
Is that what you're up to?
So, good news, LGBTQ. Our gay agenda's working. Keep pushing forward. We're doing it. We'll make the whole world gay.
Congratulations on your maniacal plan. I'm so proud of you guys.
Yes, look at that. 1 in 6.
It is
great. It's great news. It's great, especially becoming the Pride season. Look at that. We're growing.
Yeah.
We're doing it.
It's honestly, I produce Homophilia over there. And
love
just
those guys.
The difference in generation. Oh, they're so great. But yeah, I mean, it's a topic that comes up really often of just like just within the last 10 years of how much progress has happened. It is something really to be celebrated, and I love it. I don't love the headline. I like the progress within the last 10 years.
This headline needs a little progress, but the facts are great. Headline terrible. All right, well, we should take a little break, Renee, and
let's take a little break
and talk about the it's the maximum fun drive. Pew, pew, pew. We'll be right back. Minority Corner is part of Maximum Fun, which we all know it's artist-owned and audience-supported, a.k.a. we here at Minority Corner, like, Renee, we own this show, and you own Can I Pet Your Dog, and that last part of, you know, supported by, that's for all you listeners, that's where you come in.
Yes, because when you support a show like this...
And great shows like Can I Pet Your Dog.
You are all directly allowing us to do the work we love, as well as help Max Fun plan for future shows.
But most importantly, you all are voting with your dollars and saying that I want more of that Minority Corner. It's a big here at Minority Corner, Renee. We're always saying vote with your dollars. And when you support shows like this, that's what you're doing. You're voting with your dollars.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, James, should we tell them what the theme of this year's Max Fun Drive is?
I think we should. I think it's time. I think we should let them know. Oh, that's good. Well, okay. It will not be a complete surprise to you if you have already been listening to shows this week, but it's Community.
Pitch don't perfect. We love it.
We like that. We love that because that's what we do, right? We're building community. We're creating community.
It's everything. It really is pitch perfect for the year that we just went through, James.
Oh, girl, it's been a year. It's been a year, but we survived and persevered through it. And I really feel like this past year has really made us all so much stronger. And I love the Maximum Fun community, but I specifically love my Minority Corner community because y'all show up week after week. You're open to, you know, going on this journey, doing the work, and y'all have helped me out so much process this past year and everything that has been happening with the pandemic and this, you know, racial reckoning that we are experiencing and going through. And, you know, there's more, you know, queer Gen Z folks, so we got to make room and space for them. So the community is clearly growing.
Yes.
And you all also go out there and you share this podcast. You're out there talking about it, talking about your findings. It just literally is like this ripple effect. So y'all are the community. So this theme is really a celebration of you.
James, I will say this. Some people may not be in a place where they can participate right now, where they can become a member. And to them I say, absolutely no problem. Don't you worry about it. Don't you worry about it.
We got you. We appreciate you. And you're stepping up to contribute for those who also might not be able to, who listen and they want to see this show and this community to continue to grow and flourish. So you're helping to step up for those who maybe can't.
Oh, I love that so much. Yes, sign me up. I'm going to do it. Absolutely. Yeah. Who can I help? Yes.
All right, you're in. Yes. Well, it's super easy. And I know our listeners, they really love to just be a part of helping and supporting great causes and Minority Corner and Maximum Fun shows. But here's the great thing. Because we appreciate y'all's support so much that we're going to give you some awesome, cool things as a thank you. For whatever level that works for you, you're gonna get some cool.
You sure are. You had to. And now, listen, I gotta dive in deep. I gotta tell you about some of these things that you can get. Yeah. $5, James. Just $5. You get bonus content. Yeah. Now, BOCO might be what folks may call it.
Yeah.
It's what some of the kiddos are calling it. Now, I want you to dive in on exactly what the BOCO is this year. But I, before you get there, would like to tell you that not only do you get the bonus content for this year, you get the bonus content for every single show on the network for eternity. For as long as it has been around, you get that bonus content. So if you're bummed and don't have any other shows to listen to, you got $5? I got years of podcasts for you.
And we've got an amazing crossover. Like, if you can't get enough... Minority Corner, Can I Pet Your Dog, crossover action. We did some BOCO, as the kids are calling it.
It was podcaster on podcaster interviews. So James interviewed Alexis and I about the process of making Can I Pet Your Dog, and then we got to interview James on Minority Corner. So James is so good about lifting up his guests and telling you all the like sort of current events. But I'm sure like you're here because you love James. Don't we all? So if you're just like, I kind of want to hear the behind the scenes of how does a show get made and what is that like to make? Yeah, we got you. for that reason alone, you should listen to this. Gotcha. Just because it is so fascinating. And I don't know, I was already amazed with you. But then when I heard what it takes to make this show, was unbelievable.
Right back at you. It was such a great, wonderful time spent with you two ladies over there. And here's the thing. Yeah. If you join or upgrade, maybe you're already at the $5 level. You're like, okay, let's kick it up a notch this year. If you go up, join or upgrade at $10 a month or more, and like $10, like that's... I mean, it's like doing a Netflix, like adding on another Netflix or something, right? Like you got right. this, you can do that easy. And again, you're boning with your dollars, getting some awesome content, and you will then get a Max Fun Show pin of your choice. Mm-hmm. What's your pin like? What is it?
We went real basic this year. It just says, can I pet your dog?
It's cute. I've seen it. I actually, when I saw yours, I was like, I got a little pin envy. I was like, oh, because we don't have one that just says Minority Corner. And I kind of like that, just repping the show. Well, people want that.
For next year. We can do it for next year. No, tell me all about yours. What can people expect?
Ours are, you know, those like, you know, fists in the air, solidarity, justice fists, you know, up in the air. Yeah. We did that, but it's like rainbow color because, you know, we're social justice for everything, all movements, all people. Like,
are you out of your mind? That's the best pin of the year. Sorry. Cute. Sorry, other shows, if you're listening, but... Congratulations on winning best pin of the year.
It's a pretty dope pin. But here's the thing. Yeah. We're actually going to be taking a break for pins for a bit after this year. So this is the year to do it. So you want to round out that pin collection? This is the year to do it.
You got to go. You just got to do it. I'm in. I'm sold. I love BoCo content. I love a pin. You know what I also love? Tea. And I really love tea in a rocket. Oh, friend, do I have good news
Rocket
for you.
Rocket tea.
Rocket tea. Yeah. Now, I'm not one to love aesthetics unless it's good, unless it's really good. And when I saw this, I was just like, come on. It's just the cutest little, first you get a tin, like a square tin, and you got customized tea in there, and then your little tea dipper, that's a rocket. It's a rocket, James. What? The dipper's a rocket.
Oh, see, every year, there's just the team behind the scenes creating this, like, highly creative, amazing shit. This is, oh, my God. I can't even, shit is doing a disservice. Gold, luxury, amazingness. Yes. But that sounds, well, I love tea and I love rockets. Mm-hmm. So it's like two of my favorite things.
There's
my
also,
inner child.
Do you have like a favorite mug or a favorite, like, I have a dish towel that a friend gave to me. And every morning I'm in a better mood because I was like, oh yeah, that's the one that Stephanie gave me. So I think that there is also something if you have tea every morning, it will just make you happy every morning. It's weird, the association, but it works.
You're going to kick off your day with something so great. So if you've already joined or upgraded already, we just want to thank y'all so much.
Thank you.
We cannot do the show without you. So if you are ready to do so now, you can visit MaximumFun.org/join. Now.
I'm going to say it one more time. MaximumFun. And right now, because you're listening, so you can go one more time. MaximumFun.org
do it now.
/join.
Here she comes. There's a horse and it's coming down the line. It's got to be is that racism? I don't know. Is racism pulling ahead? Do we know? Oh, there's a winner. Do you know where we are?
I feel like we might be at the Kentucky Derby.
Boom! Yeah. There it is. And she didn't even have to look at the show notes to know where the fuck we were. It was my award-winning improvisation.
It sure was. It sure was. I also feel like something that tipped me off was the racism part.
Well, we don't know yet. We don't know.
Oh, sure. So, yes. Remains to be seen.
The Kentucky Derby just happened, and I had a colleague of mine who was like, I'm going to watch the Kentucky Derby this weekend. And then they were like, but is it racist? And I didn't have an honest answer for them, but boy, was I intrigued. Because when I do hear the words Kentucky, I already think like, oof, something racist is probably happening.
Yep.
But unless it's followed up by like fried chicken, and I'm like, no, that shit is good. So, yeah. But it could be used as a racist term because it's like, oh, there's a black person eating Kentucky fried chicken. Mm-mm. Fuck you. Everybody loves fried chicken. It's
goddamn
good.
Delicious.
That's
for everyone.
Stupid. Yeah. Gosh. So I did some digging, and today we're going to discuss and we're going to find out is the Kentucky Derby racist? We're going to find out. I don't know.
Proven facts.
So it just happened, the Kentucky Derby, May 1st, 2021. Picture yourself, you've got your mint julep, you've got your big hats, and there's horses. We're there undercover, and we're like, okay, but is this racist? Okay, yeah. So I did some research, a lot of blogs. This is coming from a lot of different sites. We'll put it in the show notes so you can also check my sources. But one of the first, one of the first blog sites that came up about this when I said, is this Kentucky Derby racist, came back from Push Black. And the very top of their first sentence, they wrote, America's popular horse racing event, the Kentucky Derby, is steeped in racism.
Yeah.
So we might have a clue into answering.
Yeah, let's hear that adjective again. What is it? One more time? Steeped. Okay.
Like tea. Okay.
Yeah.
Like tea. If you get your maximum fun dry.
Yeah.
Just like rocket that. Tea.
The polar opposite of that. Exactly. Max fun is good tea, and this is bad tea.
Yeah. This is bad tea. Oh, we still in the bad tea. So so the first Kentucky Derby was won by Aristides, I think I'm saying this right, but y'all got to Google. Aristides in 1875.
Okay.
It was his horse, and his jockey was a black man, 19-year-old Oliver Lewis, and his trainer was a black man, Ansel Williamson, who was born a slave in Virginia.
Okay.
And in this very first Kentucky Derby, there were 15 horses in the race. And about 13 or 14 of them, I'm getting mixed numbers, but at least 13 of them were ridden by black jockeys. So that's the very 13 out of 50. That is, either way you slice it, that's a good, 86%, yeah. I would say, yeah. of the jockeys. And the first Kentucky Derby were black. All right?
Okay.
And it's, when you think about the Kentucky Derby today, I doubt what comes to mind is black jockeys.
Certainly not. No.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So here's the thing. Formerly enslaved black men who during slavery were tasked with raising prized cattle and horses, this is stuff that white folks were like, I don't want to do this, right? So black folks had this connection to the horses. They were, had a relationship with them. They knew how to handle them. And they were then enlisted as jockeys for the race. So this is why, in the early days, this was one of the most lucrative career paths for black men. And, after American slavery, or through slavery, this led to generations of black men growing up around horses and horse riding. So, again, not something that you would normally sort of think about. But then you're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Like, who was tending the horses? Right. Who had these relationships with the horses? It was black folks.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this was the norm, really, for black men to be jockeys. And black men, they rode the horses, they trained them, they had the experience. And I want to highlight four historic black jockeys and just sort of their story and
James,
what
I love this.
And
yes.
What happened to them?
Okay. Well, maybe I'm not going to love this.
Okay. Yeah. So, we got to know our history.
Yeah, we
gotta
do. Know our history. Okay. Yeah.
I mentioned them earlier, but Ansel Williamson, who was involved in the very first Kentucky Derby,
right?
He was a great thoroughbred trainer in the Derby era. He finally went into the Racing's Hall of Fame in 1998.
Okay.
But he also wasn't the only top black trainer or jockey. Of the first 16 who were running in the Kentucky Derby, eight were won by black jockeys, as were 15 of the first 28. And of the first 17 Derby winners, six were trained by black men. So in every one of the stats of the Derby in the original days, black folks are snatching trophies, roses, and crowns all over the place. We're so involved in it.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the movie Seabiscuit, but I recollect from the trailer, nary a black person in sight. Can I probably wager? Maybe I'm wrong, but you just don't see a lot of stories about black jockeys. And yet, I'm going to give you four movies waiting.
Yeah. Okay.
So the most famous of the black jockeys was Isaac Burns Murphy. He was the first jockey to win the Derby in consecutive years and the first to win it three times. And he was recognized as the top jockey in America, and he became super wealthy, so rich. He had a large home in Lexington.
Okay.
He was actually the first celebrity black athlete, and one of this biographer, Joe drape of the New York Times called him the first millionaire black athlete.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
This is the genesis of it. Okay. And he actually, but here's the thing. He actually might have actually been just the first millionaire athlete, period. Because they were just making shit tons of money. And again, right. This is like really like a lucrative path for black folks where there really wasn't a lot of other work or options for them.
Right.
And at his funeral in 1896, it was in Lexington and the New York Times came to cover it. I mean, that's already like, I don't think the New York Times is covering my funeral, which is 1,000 years away.
They will be.
But yeah. Okay. Oh my gosh.
That's a big deal. That's a big deal to get the New York Times cover. Yeah.
Guy who narrowly escaped, the most colds. Unfortunately passed away.
Did die of a cold. Yeah, it's we all saw it coming, exactly.
Successfully escaped and narrowly like dodged 96 colts.
Thank you. And then, that's the point we want to focus on.
And then, tripped down a well in a colt.
Of course. Yeah. Yes.
But Murphy was also the first jockey inducted into the National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Then we have Willie Sims, who won the Derby in 1896 and 1898, won all three Triple Crown races nearly 2 decades before the Triple Crown was even named. Whoa. So before it even had a name, he was like, I'm winning this. I'm here to win. And then this is a wild one. So are your pearls ready? Because get ready.
Got them.
Get your clutch in hand.
Right.
Listeners, stretch out your clutch hand because here we go.
Here we are.
All right. This is going to start to paint the picture of to, again, answer that question. But why is it, if black people are being so successful, I don't see, James, why? What's the deal? Like, why is this place racist? It sounds like they're able to flourish. So, Jimmy Wingfield, he won back-to-back derbies in 1901 and 1902. He was actually the most recent African-American to win, the African-American jockey to win the Kentucky Derby. And he was riding Harlem Racecourse. I'm not sure if that was the name of the horse. That was his horse. I think that is his horse. Sure. Harlem Racecourse outside of Chicago. And his white counterparts, they really tried to run him and his horse up against the rails. So this was the practice that the white jockeys would start to do towards black jockeys, where they would ride them up against the rail. And this is where you get the term rough riding from.
Huh.
So they would rough ride the black jockeys to the rails, and it would obviously cause injury to the jockey. It would cause injury to the horse as well. And
my,
then,
huh, look at that. I want to make sure that I am disgusted. In a, disgusting humans.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And then by the time you get to 1904, and we're going to circle back to what led to this, black riders were banned from many racetracks across the country, including Churchill Downs, which is where the Kentucky Derby is even held. Okay. So before all this, like, again, we had money was booming, right? It was black people were like, okay, we got a place. They were making money. But like anything in this time, and sometimes until today, white men could not handle the success that black folks were getting. Mm-hmm. Enter Jim Crow. We need to, when in doubt, you need to fix black people. Just
do that.
Call Jim Crow in.
He'll fix it. Right.
Always does. So 1866, Plessy versus Ferguson happens. And this is essentially what the separate but equal doctrine that came in. It was like, separate but equal segregation. That's fine. It's better this way. And so through that, as a result, through, Jim Crow, and because you had this, the Supreme Court essentially ruled that, this is fine. With white people and black people, it's not unconstitutional to have separate but equal is the, what they came down to. And so, so then through that, black jockeys just soon dwindled because they could be like, we don't allow black jockeys here. You just started to see this as a process more and more.
God.
And, essentially what you end up happening by the time 1921 rolls around, from 1921 to 2000, no black jockeys raced in this event that they helped create and put on the map.
From when to when? 80 years?
Oh, 1921 to 2000.
So the awards on the wall have... Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. No, I'm seeing it. I'm picturing
Isn't
it.
Isn't that wild? Yeah. From 21 to 2000, and like you even had like we were alive in a time period where they could not allow black jockeys were just like not they weren't race they weren't racist.
How did they get away with that?
Great question. So we're gonna get to this. So we're gonna go back to a little bit like what were some of their systemic practices that they're doing. Mm-hmm. So again, I talked about like on the tracks, like the white writers would essentially do the rough writing and they would use physical intimidation to keep them from also being hired. So they were like, it essentially became a liability to hire a black jockey because they would get harassed on the tracks. They would get harassed off the tracks and they would just get harassed looking at the tracks. Like they just were getting harassed. Right. And this was a quote from one of his articles is that the jockey club, then they formed the jockey club, which was formed in the 1890s, and it was to regulate and license all jockeys. And then one by one, the black folks were denied their licenses and renewals. And by 1911, they had just pretty much disappeared. They weren't getting licenses. So by 1911, so at that point, it just started dwindling out. And you have the last black folks who even have licenses. They retire, they leave. And then the jockey club to this day, I have to double check this, but it says that the jockey club today has 128 members and none are black.
How do we change this? What do we do?
Well, there is, we'll circle, the Kentucky Derby is trying to do some stuff, which we'll talk about when we get to like their anthem.
Oh,
but again, this is just, these are great questions.
Outrage is revving and ready and steeping. A steeping with outrage.
And many of these folks, like Wingfield included, they were like, okay, I have to go. They were essentially barred from American races, so they went to Europe. Wingfield in particular had a great racing career in Russia, Poland, Germany, and France. Although when he went to Russia, the Bolshevik Revolution happened shortly after, so he was like, gotta get out of here. And I'm sure one of the world wars wasn't far off after that. Right. So. Yeah. So this was the last guy to race. Henry King rode Planet in 1921 to a 10th place Derby finish. Okay. And he was the last black jockey to participate in the race until the 2000s, where you wouldn't get someone. I think it was, we'll have this down a little bit later, but I believe it was Kevin Krieger who made a run for the Roses in 2013.
Okay. Great.
Yeah. There have been no black trainers in the race since the end of World War II, and none in the past, three decades. So, yeah, there is some hope. There is some hope that we're going to talk about in a moment.
Let's see if we can pull me out of this blind rage that I can't see you.
Oh, gosh. Well, I will. I'm going to try. There's going to be some hope. So I don't even know this, but there's an anthem that gets sung at the Kentucky Derby. And it's questionable as to whether it is also racist.
Yeah.
So it's the state song of Kentucky.
It's racist.
And the song is called, we don't know. Let's get some more information. Right, let's use your catchphrase.
Thank you. Your
Minority Corner. Let's get some more information. Okay. So it's called My Old Kentucky Home. The original title was Poor Uncle Tom Goodnight. That's its genesis.
Oh, God.
So already not looking good,
not
right?
Not great. Nope.
So it was written in like either 1921 or 1936. I saw two very, very different years. So one of those years, right? It was written by Stephen Foster. And so there's a lot of like scuttlebutt of like, is it racist? Was it not racist? So Stephen Foster was hanging out with a lot of like abolitionists. Those were his friends that he was rolling with. And the idea was that like he read, you know, Uncle Tom's Cabin. And originally the song was to, you know, the song imagines an enslaved man nearing the end of his life who has been sold away from his old Kentucky home to the deep South and permanently separated from his loved one. It talks about the horrors of slavery and its account of family separation and backbreaking labor in the South. But the character also sings fondly of his earlier idyllic life as an enslaved individual in Kentucky. So, and some people like, and so Frederick Douglass was like, yes, I am for this song. I am standing for it. Thank you for like awakening people to like the horrors of slavery. Like he saw it as an anti-slavery song because originally, you know, I was thinking that this guy saw Uncle Tom's Cabin and was like, or read it and was like, oh, I need to write a song about it. Right. But Foster's right. parents and family were Southern Dixie Democrats, the wrong kind of Democrat, if you will. And yeah, so like there was a lot of back and forth. There's some people were like, oh, you know, it's, and he was just also kind of silent on it. And again, we're looking for not even allies, but accomplices, right? Like not a Becky mm-hmm. who might be ambivalence and, you know, your silence is deafening, right? So he never really came out and said what side of it is it. And so at one point, you know, the song was banned in like the 50s from broadcast because it mentioned the word darkie in the original. They've taken out words of the song. They've put some back in, like, and in the 1950s, they're like, okay, we're not going to play the song anymore because it mentions the word darkie, which, okay, thank you for, we're not going to, you know, play this anymore. Good. But yes, then, like, locals were like, this is an outrage, and they protested. This is in this back and forth. And in some ways, I feel like it's a song that I think, like, people are like, oh, it's heritage, and it doesn't mean what you think it means. I feel like it's enough messiness to just do away with it, right? Yeah. If there's someone who's like, I think this might be racist, let's just find a new song. Let's just find a new song. And
please, this is so easy.
Yeah, it's just that easy. And really, I think there was an article that from Salon, they were like, yeah, I mean, this song has also been used, like, in Boston as a racist taunt towards their black peers. The Daughters of the Confederacy, who, that's not good. They love this song. The Ku Klux Klan loved that. Anytime the Daughters of the Confederacy.
Nope. This is all the information you need.
You asked for us to get more information, and it looks like we got it.
Honestly, at this point, I would love any word of it that isn't racist. Give me one piece of evidence that's just like, that one's okay. You don't have it. It doesn't seem.
The idea was like, they're like, oh, it talks about how, you know, tough slavery was. But I think there's this mindset and a lot of pro-slavery folks, and they were like, oh, but, like, you know, either A, slavery wasn't that bad, B, you know, the Negro loved their life on the plantation, and their, you know, masters were so good to them, they would treat their property so well, and, you know, they really enjoyed it, they really are the second class, so, I mean, it's, you know, and so that's how they would frame it. I also think it is a coded song. I think these white racists knew it was, you know, coded and bullshit, and they're just trying to dog with, not dog whistle, but dog bark in our faces their racism. I thought you would like that.
Yeah, it's just full on dog barking is what that is.
It's just full on dog bark. Your dog barking your racism.
You know that whistle? Right, exactly.
Your dog barking your racism in my face. And the article in Salon was like, I think he was just trying to maximize his sales. He was being purposely like, he wasn't saying whatever it was because both sides ate it up and he was able to capitalize on it and make a shit ton of money. So we see you.
I
want to give you some hope of what just happened, like, recently.
Okay, all right.
So So there's hope. This past Kentucky Derby, Kendrick Caramucci had a chance to become the first black jockey in 119 years to win the Kentucky Derby. So he ran his race. And so the first person since 1902. And before him, Marlon St. Julian was the first black jockey to run in 2000. Patrick Husbands, who should be my husband by that last name, in 2006. Mm-hmm. And then Kevin Krieger in 2013. So it's been spotty. It's like a Dalmatian. So you just keep using dog references and you're like, I understand what's happening.
I love it. You know, listen, okay, finally, I understand. Yes.
So it's spotty, a little Dalmatian. Here it is. There's a black rider here and there. Yeah. And his presence has been like a big reminder just to how marginalized black folks have been. You know, he grew up in Louisiana, son of a jockey. He got an early taste for the lifestyle. He'd wake up at 4:30 in the morning to go with his dad, who was, he would go with his dad to the tracks. And he started riding in 2000. At the age of 16, he enjoyed a 21-year career that took him from Louisiana to Texas to Philadelphia. Blah, blah, blah. He's been racing. And his whole entire quote as he went into this, he's got some really impressive stats. I think he has, like, 118 million that he's garnered since the beginning. And he doesn't collect all that money. It's, like, the money that, like, his horse and sure. you know, gets
sure,
this
sure, sure. But still, right? that's very impressive. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. I think he's won more than 3,400 races and earned like over $118 million. He broke his leg 3 years ago, but he's gotten back up on it. And he had a shot and he said, I quote, I'm coming to get those roses, which I just love that.
Yeah, you are. I also would like, and he's going to get him.
I would like to, I've seen a picture of him. I'd like to marry him and help him get those roses. Why not?
Would he get a rose from you? I don't watch The Bachelor, but I feel like.
That was good for all of our Bachelor fans.
James, guys. This is big.
So, but the Kentucky Derby did happen. He did not win. He, you know, he was there. And we're helping to dismantle the system that his ancestors were a part of building the system. So I just, you know, reclaiming this whole entire journey and system. But I think, what do you think the verdict is? I asked in the beginning, is the Kentucky Derby racist? What are your thoughts? did we answer?
It's very racist.
Okay. Yes, I wasn't sure. I was just I was just given the facts, so I didn't. This is just what I found.
Okay. Sure.
Sure.
I appreciate you being so curious about such a thing, but I feel like you have gathered some information, and the information has told you, riddled with racism,
riddled, overflowing,
just top. To tail racism.
But I do think you should always go and dig a little deeper and find out the information for yourself. But when you're like, is this racist? Sure. The question is, well, is it happening in America or was it created in America? Is its history from America? And usually the answer is going to be, well, then yes, like because it's systemic racism. Right. It just is there.
You're going to get a yeah. You're going to get a yeah. Yeah. We hate it. Let's look to change it. But I do think you could probably change the is to how. And just put how in front of it.
That's how I actually should have started it.
How
I love
front.
That.
There you
how
go.
Is this racist? I think I...
Sure. If it's in America, go ahead and take out
it. Do we have a new podcast on our hands? How is this racist with James and Renee? I think that's a really good idea. Oh, we dig in and we figure out. Because it is racist, but like how? And then we can look to dismantle it, right? It's like you got, it's like when you get knots all tied up. Great. How? Okay, we see it's tied up, but how? And how do we undo it, right? Oh, pledge break. Oh, I feel like I'm in a musical. Is this a musical directed by Steven Spielberg?
It sure is. It's going to get dark. Okay, we got this pledge break. But I got questions.
Uh-oh. I hope you got time. Am I in trouble?
You're not in trouble, but you do have some answers for me that I need to get to the bottom of. You know, like you always tell me, I think we need some more information.
We do. James. Are you Oprah Winfrey-ing me?
I'm Oprah Winfrey-ing you. Okay. Yes. Right. But it's going to be fun. They're all fun, easy questions. Let's go with this one first. What does doing this show mean to you?
You know, I saw this question and you would think that I had something prepared and I have nothing. But I don't need to prepare because I already know straight from the heart. This show, it's my lifeline. I've been doing this show for, it'll be 6 years in June, and I could not imagine not doing this show. I feel like it helps me to show up in the world and to help create the world that I want to see and really to build a community that I am proud of. And we get to do so many different things. We're not just talking about, we talk about social justice, but we also like laugh and giggle and say penis. And it's all the things that I love and enjoy. And we get nerdy as well. And so it's just like this show for me, it's home. I have grown so much in my identity as a Black queer man. This show just means it's the world to me. It is. I don't know who I would be without the show. And I don't want to know him.
Yeah.
I don't want that guy in that alternate reality.
I don't like that guy. God. I don't want to know him. Ugh. Yeah.
Ugh.
Listen. And if that's the case, then this show is now my lifeline because you are my lifeline. So. Shows changed everybody's
you
life.
Are the love
but I do.
Of my life. You are the love 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 of my life.
You are the love of my life.
You are the love of my life. You are the love of my life. That song does not have an end, so
it doesn't. It just keeps going. Okay, it just keeps going, but I didn't want to stop you.
Dun, 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 dun. You are the love of my life. 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 Dun, 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 dun. Remix.
I can't get enough of it. And here's what's so lovely is that was the perfect theme, the perfect interlude into how has the Max Fun community supported you in the last year?
Oh, my God.
I mean, yeah, that's a love song if ever I've heard it. It's so perfect for such a thing.
This year has been tremendous. I am going to be honest. I wasn't sure if we were going to continue doing the show. We had the murder of George Floyd happen. And the listeners came out in large numbers, and they supported the show. And again, voting with your dollars, you're like, we want more of this. We need more of this. We want to support this. I love doing the show, but it is a lot. It is a lot of time. It is a lot of effort. It's a lot of energy. It is emotionally exhausting sometimes. But having the community come out and support this was huge. We were able to bring on, we were always upgrading our equipment. Every Max Fun Drive, we're able to get new mics, or this time new people. We're able to bring on Sarah Brown, Sam Jackson, which they are an invaluable part of this podcast. I could not do it without them. Last year was a huge transition. We were down to one permanent co-host and lovely guest co-host, which we love.
Yeah.
But it was also like, I didn't know if I could keep doing this. And
it's a lot of work on one person. Yes. Yeah.
And through the you all, I was able to find the support that I needed to keep doing, to keep going on. So the show could go on, because you are the love of my... Okay, well, yep.
There we go. I was hoping.
Dun, dun. I was dun, dun.
But to that end, and I think that there is also an element this of what is it like being able to do the exact show that you want to make and that people need because it is member supported.
Oh my God, what a gift. You know who my producer is? Me. And you know what? He's a bitch. But in a good way. Like, I am a work bitch. I'm like, okay, no, this needs to be better. Research that more. You were off key on that note. Like, but in all the good way. And I love my boss. I love him. But it is nice. Yeah. Like, what I love, like, Maximum Fun literally is just like no notes. They just do your thing. And we would not have been able to keep doing Minority Corner. We joined, I think episode 15, we joined Maximum Fun. I do not think that we would still be here 6 years later if it wasn't for being a part of Maximum Fun and having these members. As much as we love doing the show, it's a lot of work, it's a lot of effort, and to be able to have people supporting you so that way you can continue to give the time into it, it means, and having creative freedom, like what a gift. I'm spoiled in a lot of ways because I am executive producer, HBIC, I changed my CEO. Yeah. I change my title whenever I want. It's a gift, and it's because the listeners I'm able to do this and literally living my dream and part of my gift, like of how I want to show up in the world, the work that I want to do. It is this show and it is this podcast and the members and the listeners.
At this point, obviously people are like, yes, how do I get to be part of this? I want to be part of this. How do I do? Where do I go? Yes. What do I do? James, help them. Absolutely. Where do they go? How do
and
they
so
support?
I hope that you like I've revved you up that you're like, okay, I want to become a member, or you're like, okay, I'm ready to upgrade this like Beyonce style. Cause I always look at this as like, it's our annual commitment ceremony. Each year, you know, we ask our listeners to either make a commitment to becoming a member or just a full on supporter, or just to renew our vows, kick it up a notch, right? Like, so this is that time. This is that year.
Yes, absolutely. So again, you guys know where you're going. You go to www.maximumfun.org/join. Pretty easy. It's pretty easy to do.
You know, most people choose the $5 or $10 per month, and some support at $20 a month or more. Find the level that works for you. I think the most important thing is just, if you can, get involved in the action. Get involved in the community, because we love you. We need you. We can't do the show without you. We're so grateful to those of you who are able to support. And again, you make it so we can do this show. And it's not, and the show's not just for ourselves, but it's for all the people who enjoy, you know, what we do. And we continue to do it because of your membership. So you all keep the lights on. We thank you for that. You know what? You all came through this last year and we were able to keep going strong. And I love y'all. I love being here, and we're gonna keep going. We're gonna just keep on going. Y'all go to MaximumFun.org/join to become a member, upgrade, and do what you do. Again, MaximumFun.org/join, and we thank you.
Thank you.
Renee's Corner, woof, woof, woof. She's bringing it.
Yeah.
She's bringing in the information. Yeah. We're going to celebrate it because she knows her shit. She's amazing. We love her. And we just wish we could spend all of our time with her. It's Renee. I mean,
talk about a theme song.
Oh, woo.
That's me. Woo, woo. Very bad at air horns. I'm good at growling.
Oh, I thought that was... Oh.
Put that at the end. That's not for me. That's for
my
corner.
Hi, Eartha.
I have a very sexy corner.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
I'm going to loosen up the tie here. Okay.
Thank you. Let's get cozy. Okay. Let's get comfy. Now, Jake,
why
listen,
did I just think
I
of
gotta,
HR?
I got...
HR? Is it okay? We're fine. We're fine.
Are we allowed? Are we allowed? I just... It's a story of, like... I think we're all familiar with this person. I think we're familiar with the story, but I just want to talk about the follow-up resilience of Ruthie Ann Miles. Mm. Do you know too much about her, what her story is?
I don't. I've seen...
Okay.
I don't. But I'm excited because I peaked a little bit, but I'm ready to just have my mind... Mm-hmm. Blown. It's also Asian American Heritage Month, and so being accomplices.
So this is
celebrating
an ally.
Is what we're doing.
And Ruthie is doing such incredible work for this month specifically. The amount of time that she is putting in that she shouldn't have to put in to just inform people, like, hey. But when you hear Ruthie's story, if what happened to her happened to me, I'd just be under the rock the rest of my days. So Ruthie is sure. So I would love to tell you Broadway. She's a little
Ruthie
Broadway
from.
Baby, but she's since been, she played the mother in Over the Moon, that animated film on Netflix. Okay. Mm.
Yes, yeah, okay. I have seen it. I haven't finished it, but I have
it's soothing.
Started it.
It's soothing.
But I was tired. Yes. It's not. It's a great movie.
So we'll talk with her big things and then we'll whittle
it
down to Broadway. She's also been on The Americans. She's been on the TV show Elementary. She's been on the TV show All Rise. She's like an up and coming. Sir.
The Americans, one of my favorite shows.
So incredibly talented. Tony Award winner. She won Best Supporting Actress in a Musical for The King and I in 2015. So this woman is legit talented, star on the rise. Ruthie had won her Tony Award. And then in 2019, she had her 5-year-old daughter with her friend. They were crossing the street. A car mowed them down. So Ruthie got hit by a car, killed her kid. Ruthie was also 7 months pregnant. So she's... in the ICU, killed her
kid,
and they're trying to keep this baby alive. The baby is alive for 2 months, and then the baby dies.
Wow.
Yeah. So just to, like, experience that catastrophic level of just, like, none of us would come back from that. It's just like, I'm done. Well, I'm done. Well, I'm simply done. That's all. That's all I can do.
No.
Except for Ruthie, who got herself back on stage within a year. Just because she was just like, I can't, that's not my kid's legacy. That's not what I do. She now has had another little baby, and is going to start in the off-Broadway production of Chess, and is still, like, thriving in her career. So just the resilience, James, the resilience is something that I will never know.
I don't. Mm-hmm.
100%
that, like, just, you know, keep going, right? And I just also wanted to highlight, you mentioned Chess, which is one of my favorite. This is the thing that I did know about her because I briefly looked at her website and I was like, but hold up, Chess? Now, I'm not surprised, but I'm surprised, but not surprised that you know
One
about
Night
Chess,
in Bangkok.
Because it didn't
clubs,
make it over here in
but
the U.S.
The musical
like,
itself
it was, it didn't really.
Really
yeah. So Chess is a brilliant musician. I know, the reason why I know Chess is because when I used to work on the cruise ship, they did a show called West End to Broadway, and one of the numbers they did was Chess. And although, Chess is a musical that's based on, like, the Cold War, which is, like, really smart, right? Like, to think of, like, the Cold War as, like, this chess game. And there's, like, but in the number had nothing to do with the actual, like, musical, because they were dressed in, like, they were chess pieces. And they were dancing around as, like, chess pieces. Yeah. That is not the musical. The musical is not actually, like, them as chess pieces. It's, no, it's, like, the idea, like, it's a chess game, but they're human beings, not chess pieces. And one of my favorite songs is, let's see.
Oh, God, yes.
Okay. Everybody's playing the game, but nobody's rules are the same. Nobody's on nobody's side. Mm-mm. Brilliant. Everyone's playing the game, but nobody's rules are the same. Nobody's on nobody's side.
It is.
I mean, talk about my past relationships, which my ex-boyfriend, he, British, he had the DVD of, like, the Chess did, like, a performance of it. Like,
Adam,
I think,
Pascal.
Like, not Anthony
Adam,
Rapp.
Adam Pascal?
Pascal.
Oh, I bet he killed
the
that.
Rent guy. Adam Pascal. He was in, he was in a
it's
performance.
So,
so there was a DVD
incredible.
Copy of it. So anyways, that's my relationship with Chess.
If you were looking
Chess,
for, it's got, like,
it's
the
on
same
my Broadway
sort of,
musical
like,
playlist.
You want to try to not like it, but the same, like, 80s monster power ballad feel of you just, you're going to be in it. You're going to be in it so quick. Nobody's Side will get you. If you're feeling a little more angsty, Heaven Help My Heart will get you. It's it's just the best. It's the best. Someone Else's Story.
Oh my gosh. It's got the hits.
But it's all the hits. Like, unrequited lovey songs that you need.
Surprised and not surprised that you love it. It's all of that. And again, like, the stakes couldn't be higher.
Yeah.
It is a love story amidst the Cold War. I mean, move over, Romeo and Juliet. Those stakes are low. Right. Oh, you're two teenagers? Okay, West Side Story, we got it. It's hard.
Find that
you're
your familiarity with chess
love.
Made you a little
Cold
less
War.
Impressed with the Queen's Gambit. That you're just like, it's been done. It's been done. You don't need to. You don't need to. It's fine.
Is that the plot? I never saw the Queen's Gambit. I have to. I didn't see it. Because here's the thing. No one has been like, you've got to see this. Everyone has watched it.
Right.
And everyone watched it because they were like, oh, we all have to watch
it. Just,
it
came out during one of the like more angsty, like, so is the world ending? I guess I'll watch Chess. Because it just like surrendered you so much that you're just like, well, there's nothing to be done. I guess I'll just watch 8-part series on moving pieces. Yeah. It's fine. It's fine. The acting's great. The cinematography is beautiful. Yeah. The concept's fine. Right. It's no Chess the musical. What is?
I mean, move over, you know? We've only got only room in life
move
for one
Bobby
Chess
Fisher,
story.
Move
and that's
over Queen's Gambit.
It says it in its name. It took the get out of here. It came for the roses. It snatched all the roses.
Came for the roses is the quote to leave with for today. Thank you. Thank you for bringing it back. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, but do yourself a favor and keep your eye on Ruthie Ann Miles, because if you can come back from that, you're going to rule the world. Oh. She's incredible. She's just incredible. Yeah. Mm.
Done. Mm-hmm. What a gift to celebrate. Well, thank you for that. And also, look out for Chess.
Also look out for Chess.
Get ready, America. You're in for a treat.
That's it.
If you're in the middle of Queen's Gambit, you can stop
watching
now.
You're like, I don't think I can do this.
Just get ready for Chess. Just stay primed and ready.
Thank you.
Be like, Chess is coming. Don't you worry. You're going to get all the Chess you need.
James. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Ruthie, thank you for inspiring us, and Renee, thank you for just lighting up our world. You are just, you know what
you are?
Are
the
love you of are the love of my life. You are the love of my life. You are the love of my life. You are the love of my life.
Careful.
You are the
keychains. Excuse me.
You are the love of my life. You are the love of my life. You are the love
of my life. No, and I appreciate it so much. And I think if anybody was on the fence for like, oh, should I become a member of Max Fun Drive? I'm sorry, do you want to support a podcast and a singer-songwriter? Now, granted, it was written beforehand, but not in this rendition. Not in this rendition. Exactly. two for one right here.
I mean, not this rendition. You sure do. You gotta take it and make it your own.
Well, but I think very few podcasts provide such a thing. Informed, thoughtful updates on what's going on in the world and a quick song and dance number. How are you? Yeah. You really do. Yes.
A little quick song and dance number. You really get it all. It's the full package. Certainly. It's all you need. It is all you need. And we took you all to the dark places. We took you to the light places. Yes.
Yes.
Done the thing. Renee, always a pleasure. Everybody, go right now. You're like, I need more. I need more. Renee, you got her. Over on Can I Pet Your Dog, if you haven't
Well,
if you already listened
now
to all
I
of
will
them,
tell you what, guys. Listen to them again. Do listen to James's episodes because they are far and wide the fan favorites. Far and wide, lo and behold. By a country mile.
Oh, my goddess. And... Yeah. Yeah. And go dig yourself into that BOCO. It
really is. I can't express this enough. Like, we had such a lovely, fun night. But it wasn't silly and, oh, it's just French. Like, we had written out questions and kind of got to the bottom of just, like, what's actually going on to make this show? So if you're curious about that, I genuinely think you'll enjoy it.
Everything.
Yes. Same. Renee, thank you so much for having me. You were the love of my life.
So thank you for doing the show.
There it is. Thank you.
You are the love of my life. You are the love of my life. Oh, wow, Renee Colbert, we love her. And y'all, I just want to say thank you again to everyone who has gone out of your way to support this show and other Maximum Fun shows by becoming a member or upgrading your membership or boosting your membership. Like, literally, everything you do, it helps. You truly are the reason that we're able to continue creating this show for 6+ years. I know I keep saying it, but like, I never in a million years thought I would still be here, but we are still here because of you, and love doing the show and can't thank you enough. Also, we have a personal goal here at Minority Corner. If we can get 750 new and upgraded members and boosted to members at 750, we have some extra bonus content. We did a Bridger brunch with me, Sam Jackson, our social media manager, and our wonderful editor, Sarah Brown. We did a Bridger brunch where we watched Bridgerton, the first episode, and you can watch along with us in our lovely commentary. And then we did a second part where we broke down our thoughts, reactions to Bridgerton, and so much more. So if we hit that 750 mark, we're gonna release that into the catacombs, some extra bonus content coming your way. So if you haven't had a chance to become a member yet, you can do so by just going to MaximumFun.org/join and help us to get to our 750 new upgraded and boosted members. We can do it. We got it. We got it. Just a little tantalizing taste of where we want to go. We got a real quick fact check here. I just wanted to highlight, I know I said that the Rajneesh, I'm like, oh, it's just like Mormonism. It's just a religion, and not that like as if Mormonism hasn't like hurt people. My whole entire thing is what I'm saying is that there's a lot of problematic religions out there, and this Rajneesh organization I felt was no different than just a lot of other religions they have some good, they got some bad. I think they're very much similar in that way. And they have caused pain and hurt too. This was left out of the documentary, but there were sexual assault cases that did happen, which I thought was so interesting. I was watching the documentary. I'm like, oh, wow, there was no sexual assault. Unfortunately, there's sexual assault in a lot of religions, a lot of organized religions that happen. And this was a very, like, you know, free sex community. But I don't know that, you know, I don't know the full stories. But when I was watching some of the documentary, I was really surprised that there weren't any stories of sexual assault. And then come to find out that there are people who are coming forward with experiences that happen. So I do want to flag that, but, you know, as much as I'm like, oh, they weren't a cult, I'm not saying that there weren't anything bad with them. I hope I made that clear. I had also asked, I had said something and I wasn't sure if it was, because it was such a startling fact. I was like, that can't be true. But it is true that the Jockey Club today has 128 members and none are Black. So there that is. Oh, and this is going down today, Friday, May 7th. If you're listening to this on May 7th, if you didn't listen to the show right away, you're going to miss this. That 7 p.m., it is the We Got This trivia game show with a bunch of your favorite Max Fun hosts. So myself and Sarah Brown, we're going to be competing, trying to bring home, trying to snatch those roses, bring home those roses for Team Minority Corner. Mark and Hal from We Got This, they'll be hosting. Jordan Morris and Riley Silverman are going to be there. iPotus is going to be there as well. The JV Club with Janet Varney and Brandon Reynolds. I mean, it's just going to be a maximum fun a parade of stars competing for trivia. So be sure to check that out. We'll put a link there, but you can go to the Maximum Fun website and you can watch right on the YouTube. So we'll put a link in the show notes as well. So we'll see you there Friday, 7 p.m. Pacific. It's free. Watch us. Let's see how Sarah and I do. We're doing it for y'all. All right. That was it. We've got more amazing Maximum Fun Drive action, some surprise guests coming for you, some more crossovers, so much goodness. We love you all so much. We can't do the show without you, so thank you so much. Thank you to Sarah Brown and Sam Jackson behind the scenes, and thank you to our members and our listeners. Thank you all so much for listening and supporting Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority. Love y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.